This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Australia's number one award-winning show for exploring sex, sexuality, and self.
Hide and seek.
Visit joy.org.au/hide and seek.
You're listening to Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. Dean Beck and James Findlay are with you. We have two wonderful, very gorgeous, talented women in the studio with us, James. This is unusual for Hide and Seek.
Yeah, it's usually a vagina-free zone.
It is.
Which is quite sad at times.
But we are most happy to welcome the very gorgeous Catherine Devney. Hello.
I love the assumption that I have a vagina, but let's keep going. Daddy's very transphobic, may I say.
And one woman who has revealed to me previously that she is vaginally inclined is Rachel Berger.
Well, I know I have a dick. People for years have said you've got a dick.
It's not a dick, that's your manager.
I was going to say you are two women with balls, but then I would be in trouble if I said that.
Maybe. I don't know. There's such confusion about that.
Dan Savage would say ovaries.
Aren't they the original
ovaries? We've got it all. Ovaries. Metaphorically, we've got everything.
Now, Catherine, the last time I spoke to you was after a tragedy, and it was the sad situation with Jill Maher. And
then we've
got the recent.
Are you blaming me?
You're the common factor in this, my dear.
No English. I plead the fifth. You know what? I've got the right to remain silent because, you know, kids these days, cops will pull them up and they'll say, "Hey, sunshine, what do you guys think you're doing?" They go, "Oh, we're pleading the fifth. We're pleading the fifth." It's like and they get on the. They think it's like they really do think to call the cops. It's 911.
No, that's a problem.
That is a major problem. That is the truth.
Yeah. That is the truth. Yeah. So
I know it's quite I've been given talks to girls' schools, to a whole classroom of girls, and wanted to point out to them that there aren't very many potent, sexy women on Australian television, you know. Yes, there are. And I said, who?
Did they list them?
Yeah.
Ellen. You know, it's sad.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the women in television in Australia could be generally just called garnish. That's all they're there for. Just the little bit of parsley on the side of the palmy, a little bit of garnish.
Have you ever seen the mid-afternoon news bulletins?
No.
Right, okay. So around
we're working.
We have a life. We have a life.
We have to work.
What are you doing at home?
Well,
yes, exactly.
The women that present that for Channel 9, particularly, I find this is really terrible.
Just
but
spit
I,
it
I,
out.
Go
I,
on.
I find it difficult to take them seriously.
Why? What about them?
No gravitas.
Well,
hello.
Peter Hitchener's got a little bit of, I don't know, something.
Gravitas.
And so has Jennifer Kite.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, where did she go?
No, she's around.
She's still at seven.
She's just had so much surgery we can't recognise her anymore.
I don't actually think she has because I've seen it. No, I don't think she has.
Yeah, see, the thing is, I don't have a television. I was just making a joke. Okay. It was a joke.
I have to say that only because I've seen her this close and she's fabulous.
Yeah, right. I mean, even if you'd said the same about Peter Hitchener and you'd say, "We haven't seen him for a while," I'd say it's just because he's had so much work done. So it's
it.
Not...
I'm not
work-shaming people. I mean, I judge and in my own mind, but I tend to not let it come out of my mouth.
Yeah.
I think most of the news, female news, and I don't know what this means, it's not good or bad, but whenever I've met, and I've met several newsreaders, they have enormously big heads.
Oh,
like
right.
Really, you know, and honestly, they just, I don't know what it is. I don't know. And the weird thing is that you notice it because you're so used to seeing them only from the waist up.
Yeah.
So first of all, you think it's an illusion. And you think, maybe, because I had somebody come up to me once in a supermarket and touch my face with their finger and say, "Oh, it's not glass." This is really weird. I've been doing a lot of television, which is very strange. Oh. It freaked me out. I just stood there next to the baked beans for about 15 minutes. But when
what
I met...
your response to that?
Well, what would be your response to that? You know, and
No, it's not.
I think that's what I said.
I would just poke the person back and I go, "Oh, yes, a cunt." That's what I would have done.
It was a little old lady.
I would have done that.
You know when I said this show has got...
No limits.
No limits as far as language.
I failed to mention there was one word.
Right. Are you joking?
It depends where Catherine was pointing. Whether she was, maybe she was pointing.
In context, that's
fine.
I was pointing. This is a transformative work. We are artists.
And it's sexist to have one thing not banned. Well, the thing is that word,
which I am very fond of, is a homophone, which has two meanings. Mm. So like the
a
word...
A homo what?
A homophone.
Right.
So like, you know, he
I
was
found
on,
one of them once.
I think they all listen to the show, don't they? A homophone, for example, is he was stationary as he stood next to the stationary. She was... The heroin was off her head on heroin. Mm. And that word that we were just discussing before is also a homophone.
It is.
So Gillard has one. Abbott is one. That's how you remember. It's two different words. People say, oh, I don't like you using that word.
No, English 101.
Yeah. It's homophone.
It's funny with that word, actually, because...
It's all funny. It's just a funny word.
Well, I was watching television with my mother and one of our German friends, and the word was said during the program, and there was a glass thrown and said, you C word, yeah.
Right, right.
And the German friend goes, I've not heard that word before. What's that word? My mum goes, oh, that yarn, that is the worst word ever imaginable. It's just, you know, it's the worst word. And
well, maybe for a gay German man, friend, but well, not for your mother.
Well, that's the thing. And so he said, oh, is it worse than fuck? And she said, oh, much worse than that. Much worse than that. And he said, oh, right. Worse than shit? Oh, yeah, of course. Of course. Oh, well, what does it mean? And mum goes, oh, well, James, what does it mean?
So she actually didn't know what it meant.
I had no idea what it meant.
But yes, I'm getting a sense of the reclaiming from Catherine.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the thing is that I don't have... There's not good language or bad language. Language is just language. My 11-year-old son, I'm sitting on the couch, and he came home from school, and I'm just working, and he's taking his helmet off and staring into mid-difference and said... Who is Sir Cuntface? And I said, what? And he said, who is Sir Cuntface? And I said, I don't know what you mean. And he said, we were doing maths at school. We were doing maps at school all day and they kept talking about Sir Cuntface. Circumference. And I put it up on Facebook and somebody said, I have been a geography teacher for 20 years and I've never heard that. And it's just like, oh, absolutely. There's just, I think it is... really incredibly pedestrian to kind of say some words are good and some words are bad and the C-bomb and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's very pedestrian. It's very middle of the road. It's just what bogans do. So it's all just language. It's just a word like cabbage or carrot or, you know, coffee. Cup or whatever.
Well,
yeah.
Circumference. Circumference is one of my favourite words, actually.
And now I've just joined something to it.
I know.
He was dinkum. He was absolutely dinkum. He just kept hearing it over and over. Who is this guy? I'm just going to have to ask Mum because she knows everyone.
Our abbey is not to be used as an escape. What is it you can't face?
Maria. Now.
All over Melbourne, people are laughing.
Rachel, you were on a boat. Last time we met.
I'm on a boat.
I know. Yes, yes. Many people played that. Last time I was in this studio, I was living on a converted passenger ferry in
Mambataz,
deep south of Tasmania.
Bobbing up and down.
I was bobbing up and down, sideways, everywhere, crashing against the jetty. I learned a lot about boats.
I feel lucky by the sound.
You learned a lot about the local men, too, from what I remember.
Well, that's when you're the only woman in a marina, and there's 62% illiteracy.
Oh, I need
where
that
you are. It was a lot of fun. And, there's not many Jews and boats, I don't know why. But although I did read, somebody gave me a book, and it's true, there is a history of Jewish Caribbean pirates. So I keep thinking, I'm looking. I know, laugh. But there is, everybody laughs, but there is Johnny Depp. But the thing is, there is a history. You know why? Because during the Inquisition.
It's not like the Ethiopian Jews. This is different.
No, they're different. Right. They're different. The Ethiopian Jews, who I have met several of, they are so black. Their skin is black, the blackest black.
And they're Jewish.
Right. Yeah. We're everywhere. Mm. We got in everywhere. But no, the Jewish Caribbean pirates were because they, the King Ferdinand and Isabel, Catholics.
Yep.
you know, there was the Inquisition, they got rid of the Jews, they were burning them, it had to be, everybody had to become a Catholic. So there were lots of Jewish merchants, they had boats which they brought spices in, whatever. So they began to escape that way, but also they figured that if they got together with the pirates, they would be able to then conquer the Spanish Navy. So they
How'd that go for them?
It went very well, because it's said, many people believe that Columbus was a Jew.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Jewish people think everybody was a
they
Jew.
They do. My mother thinks Elvis
is Jewish. And I'm Irish, and my they all think the Irish are the same. They all think everyone's
Everybody's
Irish.
Everybody's Irish, they do. My mother convinced me that Elvis was Jewish.
It's like the Greeks invented everything.
That's right.
Like
the they did, didn't they?
Well, you know, everyone tells us that we think everyone's gay.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
well,
you know, it's true. Most people.
I think, according to my experience, all the men I know are.
Yeah, see?
Now, if you've got a question this Christmas to ask of a Jew and an atheist, this is the time to do it. Get in contact with us. This is how you do it.
It hurts.
You're on Hide and Seek, James Finlay and Dean Beck with you, 25 minutes past nine in the studio. Oh, Catherine Devaney and Rachel Berger with us, speaking all things, well, really everything. There's no boundaries.
Legends of comedy.
Melbourne legends.
People have said to me, I said we were going to be on the show together. They went, you and Catherine Devaney in the same room. I don't know why people say that.
I know. They think that no one's going to be able to get a word in edgewise kind of stuff. But think of all the stories we know. The only reason that we know so many stories is because we're good listeners too. I want to get back to the alleged Jewish sailors, because
pirates.
Like the Jews I know don't even like to get wet. Like,
I know.
You know, they'll do it for cleanliness, but not for fun.
No, I figure. But I you know, I've got to think about pirates. I've got to think. Thank you.
It's called radio.
We're not near the boundary.
I'm very relaxed. Yes. Just for the listeners, Catherine just pointed out that I wasn't near the microphone. I just sat back, yawned, and just like
she was down looking at the Christmas windows at Meyer, still having a yak.
That's because I'm so relaxed. I'm just chatting away. You can tell I haven't had a radio career. Yes.
I want to know your thoughts on the Brazilian.
Oh, I am.
This is the woman who listens.
I am.
Because he asked me the question, but you go ahead.
No.
Catherine needs to get it out.
Are we going to have a talk about this on the way home in the car?
About this?
Just what's happened? Are we going to have to process?
No,
you know, there's always a lot of processing. I need to say before anyone else, I have had a laser Brazilian and I have no hair from the eyelashes down. You know Kate Bush? Oh. I'm Kate No Bush.
So your partner is quite happy to have a...
Delighted.
A vision of a child... bits,
Dean,
before him.
Look at these breasts and look at this ass. Could anyone possibly confuse this body with the body of a child? And if hair was the reason that made you like be childish, why do people go, oh wow, that's a bit childish having no hair down there? Why does no one say, I couldn't fuck a bald guy, that'd be like fucking a baby? Like, I mean, how does that not work out? What would you like to say about Brazilians? I got heaps of material. Keep going, right?
I came late to the Brazilian. I have to say that.
Are you there? Have you arrived?
I'm there, but only reluctantly, because
it all fell out when she had menopause.
It did. That's the truth.
Oh.
People don't tell you that. But thank you for then telling everybody.
That was a joke. I thought you were going to slap me and go roll your eyes.
But it's true. And I want women to know,
really?
And men as well. I think it happens to men too. You get older.
It does.
And
Dean?
Catherine's
not
like
quite
the Greek
chorus.
Yet. Yeah, Dean's 35, which is like 19 in homosexual years.
But the funny thing is I was in such denial. No, you lose your hair. You lose your hair when you get older. It doesn't matter whether men, women,
where
you
it
just
is,
lose
right.
hair.
Men get
over.
It. They get it in their ears and their nose and
well, they, but the thing
places.
Is I get in my ears and nose as well. You get it in weird places, but you lose it in others. Mm. So I was in such denial that I was getting older and that things were falling. That I would find sort of hair. This sounds revolting, but I'm a clean freak, so that's why I know. I would find pubic hair all over the house.
Oh. Your own?
Yeah. Yes! And I started thinking, but for a moment I thought, maybe there's a man speaking in it, you know, and I don't even... Because, you know, when you live alone for long enough, you actually start creating these fantasies because, you know, you come in, everything's the way you left. It's very sad. So if something is weird because the window was open and it blew over, you think... Look, one time after a gig in London, I was so tired. I think I'd flown in, I'd done a gig. I came back to the hotel. I fell asleep with my coat on, and I must have, like, an overcoat. This is how lonely my life is. Pathetic. I shouldn't even be talking about this. This is pathetic.
No, we did. It's fun for us.
But now I'm going to blush because it's actually very tragic.
Pathetic's good.
Yeah, well, I should move away from the microphone now. So this is really a true story. So I fell asleep, but I must have removed the overcoat in my sleep.
Yeah.
And then when I woke up several hours later, there was the overcoat.
On the floor?
No, it's just one sleeve sticking out of the bed. And honestly, for about 30 seconds, I went,
someone's here.
Someone's here, and what's he like? And I was heartbroken when I realised it was actually my coat that I'd taken. It was that sad.
If you would like to give to Rachel Berger, please.
I've also been known to dance in the middle of the night with a coat hanger. And it wasn't even a proper coat hanger. It was one of those ones in a hotel with the hook missing. I can't even get a full... You know, I was doing a waltz, dancing around, and then there was this coat hanger, and I didn't have another one. You know, trust me, I can't even get a full coat hanger.
So when you said to me earlier that you were eyeballing a prostitute giving a head job to somebody in your car park, you were actually getting off on that.
Jealous.
Fair call.
I didn't yell at her. I just said, Rachel, make sure you do it somewhere else.
Rachel looked down at my hands before and said, "Wow, you've got small hands." And a hooker once told me that's really good because it makes guys' cocks look bigger.
It's good for hookers. I was told that by a hooker. Yeah.
Well, if you're photographing.
I've got gigantic hands, which explains why I'm not a hooker.
Now, we do know that the polite word and the correct word is sex worker, but hooker is funnier and it works better on stand-up.
I love hookers like being called hookers.
Yeah, I know sex workers who say, "I'm a hooker."
I mean, sex worker sounds very worky.
Clinical.
And work.
All power to them. I'm giving it away.
Yeah, exactly. You could, well, you know, you got to take what you can get.
James Scotty has sent us a message on 0427JOY949.
Yeah, who's in trouble?
Yeah, no, he says, "I love the C word in context. Like any word, I adore Rachel and met her at a gallery."
I think there was a full stop there, James.
Yeah, right. straight after. Context, yeah. Yeah, I adore the C word and Rachel. Thank you.
But anyway, Scotty says that he met you in a gallery in Flinders Lane once when you were running a workshop and marched in, and he marched in with a mate. No, I didn't read this before I read it. Marched in with a mate, and she said, "Oh, it's not open, but have a quick look around before everyone arrives." Oh, that's lovely.
Did I do that? I must have been on a good day. I know that I'm...
Were you looking after a...
Rack off, you!
Gallery in Flinders Lane?
No, but I actually gave a workshop at 45 downstairs.
What a great space. I love that
place. It is a great space.
Great show on there at the moment. Between the Cracks, Yana Alana. Absolutely best theatrical experience I have had for years and years and years. And so that's on at 45 downstairs at the moment.
You once told me about another very special space in the north, some hangar or something that was hidden away that...
I can't even remember what it's called. It used to be an old aircraft hangar, and it's just off Sydney Road, and it used to have the Brunswick Market in it. I can't even remember what it's called, but they have started to turn it into a space that everybody can use. It was, for anyone who lives near the area, it's kind of where Mediterraneo is, over the road and off the street, and it's kind of odd looking. It's got like quite a bit of a Spanish feel to it. And it used to sell lots of school books for other languages. And so you go in there and there's a little bookshop and it was open twice a week. You go in
and
buy
very odd hours.
Yeah, really odd hours. But then I started chatting to this guy and he took me through. There's like a whole theatre there and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. And I know they're trying to open it up as a venue and a space, and they're running little markets there and stuff. I cannot remember it, but Dean, I'll get it to you because it was just, I love those little, I'm a Melbourne person. You know, we love these things. No one's ever heard of that you can't find. You know?
Now, you're pretty shitty with Melbourne at the moment, Rachel. What's that about?
No, I'm not shitty. No, who said I was shitty? I wasn't shitty. I just find it... I love Melbourne. I adore Melbourne. I'm just like Catherine. I'm a Melbourne person. I think I've just fell in love with, you know, being on a boat, so it's hard being in St Kilda. Maybe. Although I am learning to sail. See, I've got bruises everywhere.
Did you have to give it back?
The boat was sold, didn't belong to me, and I was just looking after it.
Yeah.
But because I was on a boat and because it was a ferry with
stowaway,
I was a stowaway. I have stowed away. I did stow away on somebody's boat. I did. Went on a 5-day sail. Yes,
Catherine, you've been doing some bits and pieces at Hares and Hyenas. You single-handedly have saved that place by the sound.
No, not at all. Roland and Crusader are two of the most extraordinary, innovative, generous, enthusiastic,
lovely guys,
giving people. and have they've their business, that Hares and Hyenas down in Johnson Street, has just gone through a huge metamorphosis. Mm. One, because bookshops are kind of going down the tube because people are getting e-books, all of that kind of stuff, and people are not reading as much. They're also not going out as much as they used to. There was a big drop-off in the Comedy Festival this year. Even the footy,
really?
People are not going to the footy because you can get everything that you want from the privacy of your own home. Like, once upon a time, you could watch, you know, something like the footy or a live event, but you couldn't have the social interaction, whereas now you can. You can just hop on the Twitter hashtag and find out what's going on.
But you don't get that feeling of a footy match, of the atmosphere of the people roaring. No. And you don't get the feeling of a theatre space and the audience clapping.
It's a really different thing. So Roland and Crusader are really successfully because not only books, people are not buying books as much as they did, because they'll read Facebook, they'll read, you know, articles online and all
that
kind of stuff.
That'll do.
And that's enough. But also,
they've got to supplement the income of the shop.
Yeah, that's right. The space for queer, any kind of thing, it's not as niche market as it used to be. You can kind of find it anywhere, and it's not this kind of, you know, this bookshop that you don't want anybody to see you going
into.
It's
not a secrecy thing
anymore. So they're moving more into fantastic performance stuff down there, and just you can't go wrong by keeping an eye on them on Facebook and Twitter and
I believe
they've
got padded walls now.
They
is that
are
right?
getting they've got a padded eastern wall, and they had I love the crowdfunding and the crowdsourcing which is going on with Possible and Kickstarter, and they had to raise money to do the soundproofing. They did that really successfully. Any Kickstarter that comes past my desk, I give money to. I just love people getting out and doing stuff. And at the start of the year, I made a short film and I was going to fund it myself. And then somebody said it's called The Atheist Alphabet and it's on YouTube.
A to A.
And I was going to just fund it myself. And somebody said, why don't you crowdsource it? And because I love crowdsourcing and being part of going, I helped that happen.
Yeah.
I threw out and said, listen, I'm doing this, and just thought the worst thing that could happen is I didn't make it.
Yeah.
And I was not asking for money for me, but for the director and the soundy, the editor,
crew.
Everybody. Yep. And just asked for $10,000. That all came in, got to pay them, and made this fantastic little short film, which is on YouTube, which I'm so proud of. And one of the great things about it is a lot of us love the ideas of things, but you can't do them, but you want to support people to do them. It's like, I can't do, you know, Between the Cracks, but I want Yana Alana, you know, how can I help you? Can I paint you in blue body paint? Can I, you know, tweet out or Facebook or talk on Joy about what a fantastic show it is? And so when people saw something like The Atheist Alphabet, they said, this is a great idea. I love this. The frequently asked questions that atheist gets all answered from the, you know, and going through my life from waking up in the morning to getting the kids off to the school to riding through Melbourne on my bike with my dog in my basket, Luna Park readings, you know, graffitied back streets, eating pho in Victoria Street and doing stand-up at Paran in Greville Street at the end. And they said, I can't do that, but I would love to support you. And they feel like such a part of it. And they're like, they loved that we did it in March. They loved that we made it, but they were saying, look, this is great and I helped this happen. It's such a, I love it. I just
it's
love
a healthy, it. It's a helpful promotional tool as well at the end.
It kind of is.
You get buy-in because you've got to give a little. I mean, it's not just giving money. It's give me money and we will acknowledge you in this way or we will give you that.
I wanted it to be a free access thing, so I just put on YouTube so anyone can watch it.
Yeah.
But people, there were silver sponsors who gave $250. Mm. There were gold sponsors who gave $500. Mm. And there were platinum sponsors who gave $1,000.
Wow.
So they got were in the credits. But when I do the Kickstarters, I don't want a reward. I just going, there's $25, you know, good on you. Just, you know, I don't want some shitty poster signed, you know, just
What's really interesting about the crowdfunding is that there's been so much written about the fact that we live in actually very selfish lives now. And part of it is because we are focused on our laptops, on, you know, kind of social media. And there was, you know, there's been 20 years of you know, self-improvement and stuff that says it's all about you and, you know, you are the best and you are God and, you know, success and blah. But at the same time that's been happening, and people are more introspective. You know, they walk around with headphones. They're not really aware of what's going on.
Well, everybody gives them. Don't have a conversation with anyone
on
a train or a bus.
But oddly enough, at the same same time, there are these Kickstart, you know, possibles, all these sort of ways and schemes where you can actively contribute to actually making, helping somebody else do what they want to do. I've always found that very interesting. When it started happening, I thought it's fantastic because I think certainly in show business, that's always happened. There's always been, even with big empresarios, you know, there's like, I mean, in Melbourne, there's a theatre family and, you know, theatres.
And patrons and all that sort of thing.
Yes, but everybody contributes. Yes. You know, if there's something, I know there's stories of the Comedy and the Madge, you know, where something's been, light's gone wrong, so, you know, somebody runs across.
Right.
And
yeah,
people,
yeah, yeah.
There are long relationships and people look after each other. So, you know, and during comedy festivals, and lots of comedians have done lots of benefits to get other comedians to Edinburgh. You know, it's always happened. So it's kind of part of the life I've known in this business. But to see it happen in a big way where people that have nothing to do with you decide, I'm going to help her do this or help him do that. It's really fantastic. It should happen in other ways, whether it's, you know.
Well, look at the I'll ride with you.
Like exactly. That's I mean, exactly.
It's not a financial thing, but that's just the way that we can make our world the world that we can see.
And correct.
The thing with the democratization of information is that the gatekeepers and the masters of the universe and the gods and the lollipop ladies of the world, which who were generally men, who would decide who got published, who got to sit behind a microphone, who got to stand on a pulpit, who's got to be a judge, that's all really deteriorating at a huge rate of knots. And we can, you know, every time you spend a dollar, you're voting on how you want the world to be, and you can throw money with these Kickstarters, and if you all throw in $5, you know, and it can get the world to be the way that you want to. I find it incredibly exciting that we can self-fund and self-seed our own world.
It's very encouraging. It's very
Catherine's now self-seeding her own world. This is Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. Maybe you've got a question for these lovely
ladies.
It's not
the usual type of seeding we talk about here.
Joy 94.9.
Dean Beck and James Findlay are with you, with Rachel Berger and Catherine Devney. Now, you've got a bit of a masterclass coming up. I'm sure Scotty, who's a huge fan of you both, he says these women are fabulous.
Wow. Thank you,
Scotty, for that message.
Get back in. To media.
Now, is this a masterclass in writing, a masterclass in performing? What is it?
I run something called the Gunners Writing Masterclass at La Luna Bistro, and I started this about this time last year, and I thought I would run two classes, and it's for people who are going to write better, different, or going to write that project that's driving them crazy.
Yep, yep.
And I thought I'd run two classes, and I've run 28 in just a little bit over a year, so about 16 people in each. And one of the questions I got asked, and I absolutely love it. I love it. And one of the questions I got asked a lot, they're saying, when are you going to do a stand-up one? I'd love to do a stand-up one. Please do a stand-up one. Mm-hmm. And my first thought was that I wanted Rachel to do one. And the reason is that she is an excellent stand-up, but she's an even more excellent teacher. When I was about 23 and I thought, I might want to do stand-up. Often it's like, you don't do stand-up. It's like, I'm not doing stand-up. I'm just going to do like a course on stand-up. I went and did this workshop at Swinburne, which was like Swinburne TAFE or something at the time. And it was
when we had
TAFE. Yeah, it was something like that. And it was every Tuesday night for 6 weeks, and a comedian came and talked to us for 90 minutes. And I can't remember anything about it at all apart from the last workshop, which was Rachel's workshop, and I just remember being glued to this fantastic information, practical, incisive, like, of course. And at the end she said, you should do stand-up. And I said, but I'm scared. And she said, you're not trying to kill anyone. You're just trying to make a few people laugh. And that has stuck with me. And that was the
I made her.
And that was what made
it's
me do
my
it.
Fault.
Made
it's
me
my
do
fault.
It.
You'd be nothing without
and
Rachel.
So I really, people kept asking, and I just hate the thought of people dying with their music inside them. And I just know sometimes I need to sit like this. So I contacted Rachel about being part of our Pushy Women speaking event next year. But also I wanted to say, would you like to run a workshop, a stand-up workshop under the gun banner? And she said, oh, I would love to. And so I am so delighted, and so are the people who have a half booked out. That we've got 2 days. It's like March the 14th, which is a Saturday, and March the 15th, which is a Sunday. They're two separate days, and it's 10 till 5, and they're just like, oh my god, I can't wait for this. One of the funniest responses that I've seen a lot is just like, oh, as soon as I saw that, my heart jumped out of my chest with terror. I've got to do that.
Well, what's really good about it is that everybody's terrified, and I was terrified, and I still am terrified.
And I was terrified.
Everybody's terrified. But I think it's I can't. I don't know how come I've done. I've given classes before, both to other to comedians who are starting out.
But you've done some stuff with special needs or homeless or something.
I've
haven't
done
you?
Both. I've done yeah. workshops using stand up for groups of homeless kids, and also with different people with different sort of challenges yeah, as well. Yeah, yeah. Because I think it's incredibly empowering for someone to get up and have someone laugh with
sure,
them,
sure,
and particularly for people that feel that they're completely disempowered. Yeah. But the really fantastic thing about giving these workshops is that people always say to me, oh, you're so lucky that you're funny. I'm sure they say it to you, Catherine, you're so funny. I only get invited
you're as
to dinner
once. Really.
I am, yeah. But you know that I am. People will ask me to a dinner party. They never ask me yet. Because I'm not funny. I'm not, because I'm too busy observing. The thing is, though, everybody is funny. And I always say to people, if you want to tell a funny story at work, you use all the skills that I use as a comedian. You make it interesting. You use different adjectives in the way you would normally speak.
Is it about content? Is it about timing?
It's about being no, it's all of those things can be added later.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's about somebody just giving you a platform and saying, just tell that story the best way you can. Uh-huh. And they'll tell it and they'll do it really well because they want to make you laugh, right? And then you can say, maybe it would be better. It's just the same when I started stand-up. You know, I'd go to La Joke, I'd do my gig. I died. And I think this is one of the reasons I really love doing this. I died every week for a year.
Really?
Wow.
Every, and I always.
How did you get back up?
Because
then?
The thing you have to do if you actually want to do it as a living is you have to just put your ego on the shelf for a while and just think the only way I can do this is to just keep doing it.
And each night, was it a case of just tweaking it a little bit to try new things out? Or
yes.
Right.
Well, yeah. And it was hard. I mean, there was one incident where, and this is why people say to me, I'm scared. I said, you have nothing to be scared of, because I actually, you know, had such humiliating experiences, but they're so bad that then you just have to laugh because you think, well, at least, you know, I always say the thing that you didn't write, the thing that you wrote is 20 times better than the thing you never wrote.
Yeah.
And it's the same with stand-up. At least you get it. But I remember doing a gig, it was like my 10th or 12th gig, and I had a dress on and then I died. I died. There wasn't one laugh. I died. Like, I'm seriously 7 minutes of nothing. And I think I was so nervous that you could actually hear my stiletto tapping on the stage because I was shaking so bad.
No.
So bad. It's worse. So then I got off stage and I went to the bar. I came out backstage, went to the bar, and I put an overcoat on. See, I always have an overcoat, the same one I slept with
yeah,
in London.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Put an overcoat on, went to the bar, had my back to the audience coming out of La Joke, bought two vodkas because it was that bad. And just as I was about to turn around, there was a group behind me and I heard them say, that woman was so shit.
Oh, no.
What the hell was she thinking? She was crap. And I thought, what am I going to do? I can't stay here forever. And I just turned around and went, hi. And there were several experiences like that, but I just kept thinking, but at least I'm doing it. It's what I want to do, you know. And I had, at the same time, there were three American female comics at the last laugh downstairs when I started.
Who were they?
Adrienne Tolsch and Margaret Smith, who's one of the best stand-ups I've ever met, and another woman whose name I can't remember, but she did music stuff. She was amazing. They were all amazing. And Margaret Smith was deadpan, when I'd never seen a woman do deadpan before. She was amazing. And Adrienne Tolsch was amazing. And they all said to me, they came up to watch me and said, we realise you just started, we were told, blah, blah. And they all said, just put your ego on the shelf for 3 years, forget about it and just keep doing it. And that's what I always say to people. And the thing is, even if you don't want to do stand-up on stage, I think to be given a platform to be as funny as you can be and know what funny it is that you have, that's the thing that gives people a hell of a lot of confidence. So they can use it at work or just, you know, talking to people.
So don't try and do deadpan if that's not your type of
funny.
Correct.
Because that's the mistake people make. Because I actually do comedy classes with actors. And because you give an actor a script and they then immediately mimic a funny actor.
Yeah.
Because they don't know what their funny is. Yeah. And then when you say to them, when you kind of work with them.
And yet there could be 10 funny ways of delivering something.
That is uniquely theirs.
They're funny. Yeah, right.
Yes. And there's something about, there's an enormous confidence that comes with that because we lose, as kids we're funny. You see kids miming and being characters and we all used to do that, but we then become grown-ups. And
those kids that get it and get it early on, God, aren't they little buggers?
But we've all, the thing is we all have it. But we all have it. That's the thing.
See, for me, you're talking about finding it funny. For me, with stand-up and for encouraging people to come to the Writer's Masterclass or come to the stand-up masterclass is simply this. I mean, I just cannot bear the thought of people dying with their music inside them. And people on their deathbed, they do not regret the risks that they took that didn't work out. They regret the risks that they didn't take. And I just want people to come along and they might think, they might possibly do stand-up and they might come and they have the day and at the end they do 5 minutes and they go, that's, I've done it. Well, that's enough. Yeah. That I've done it. And that's, I
just, get off your list.
That feeling of doing that thing that you're terrified of, but you, there's something inside you saying, I've really got to do that. That feeling of doing it, I vividly remember doing my first stand-up. I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it now. At the ESPY, I didn't tell anyone. My friend said, there's this guy I know called Dave O'Neill, and he does stand-up. And Dave said, hey, call Dave Tirano at the Prince Pat and Trevor at the ESPY. And I called up and I said, oh, I'd really like to have a try. I'll have a tryout. Tryout's just 5 minutes new material. Oh, if you haven't done this before. Anyway, I got like 2 hours to prepare. This guy, Trev, who used to run the ESPY, is like, yeah, you'll be on at about 9:30 tonight. And I went along and I just remember just, I just, of course, I had it all in my head, but I wrote it all down and I went and there was no one there that I knew. And the men there were fantastic, but I now realise I was 23. I was probably gorgeous. You know, I didn't think it at the time.
That was a great crowd.
And,
great crowd.
And Anthony Morgan was emceeing me on and I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, you know, please put your hands together first time. You know, Catherine and I just like picked this mic up. Like I can see it now. I picked the mic up and I did it and people laughed and I got off stage and they applauded. And the next morning I remember waking up. I was living in Fitzroy at the time. I was living in a student household. And I remember taking myself down to Mario's in Brunswick Street. Getting myself
having
some eggs
a bit
and bacon
of a morning.
And just feeling like, because I'd gone, I'd go and I'd see there's Red Simons and there's Jane Clifton and probably see you and all these famous people. And there I was, and I felt like I belonged. And a week later, Beat or Impress came out and they had reviewed me.
My first pick.
Do you know who reviewed me? Fiona Scott Norman. Saying the most interesting act of the night. And I can't tell her, I have told her, what a huge boost that was. But just to do it, to just know that you've just dare yourself to do it. That's all I'm about.
Yeah, well, it's doing it. It makes you feel great. But also, I had an experience of giving a workshop and then a few weeks later running a little night in Caulfield for over several weeks in the basement of a club. And a couple of people that had done a workshop, adults who just wanted to do what we're doing, and they turned up. So about an hour before, I said, do you want to get up and do the 5 minutes we did in the workshop? And they did. I can't tell you the joy, because what people also forget that when you go up for the first time and the audience knows, they're so generous. They're so incredible.
Yes.
So all these people that work in offices and do other jobs and a doctor and whatever, they all got up, did their stand-up, and they absolutely loved it. And Catherine's right. It's just a question of doing it. You may not want to do stand-up. I mean, why would you do stand-up for a living? I ask myself.
It's kind of, for some people, it's like bungee jumping. It's like, that looks scary, but there's something about me that wants to do it. Just to do it once to say, I did it. I did stand-up once. Yeah.
It's a very rare opportunity that you can be a part of something as special as this. So the masterclass with Catherine Devney and with Rachel Berger is on in March.
Rachel is running it.
And
it's
just
under my banner.
You're just taking the money.
It's part of Catherine's Gunners thing.
But I'll be a pupil.
Catherine's going to come to make sure I don't beat up on her.
She'll collect the money.
People.
Yeah. I know how it works.
She'll collect the money, at the door.
Go to catherinedevney.com for more information and you'll find the masterclass.
It'll be a lot of fun.
It'll be
a lot of fun.
I can't wait. I just can't wait.
And the tickets are already selling quite fast.
Oh, hotcakes. And I haven't even sent it out. I put it on Facebook today.
Because I have to say, I can't do more than 14 in a class max, because everybody has to get
go. You need to get through,
and it's a lot of it is about getting to know yourself. So people need time to do that. So we can't do many. That's why there's kind of limited space.
Rachel Berger, happy Hanukkah.
And to you, darling. Merry Christmas things.
Season's greetings to you.
Oh, season greetings.
Dean, James, thank you so much for having us.
No worries. Anytime.
You're on Hide and Seek.
Thank you.
You can subscribe to Hide and Seek's podcast for free. Visit joy.org.au/hide-and-seek for more information. Suggest a topic, a guest, or provide feedback. Email hideandseek@joy.org.au. Hide and Seek is presented by Andrew the Apprentice, James Findlay and Avi Miller. Post-production by David Cheshire.
Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek. Hide and Seek.
Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.